We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
On the Wolfpack Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
Play ball!
Welcome to the Nevada Wolfpack Baseball Podcast. Here's your host, Josh Sushon.
It's the Howlin' with the Pack Podcast. I am not Josh Sushon. I am not Josh Lewin. I am not a Joshua Tree. I am John Ramey, pinch hitting. We are with the skipper, TJ Bruce. The Wolfpack welcomes first place UNLV this weekend. You guys have won five in a row, skipper. We're going to talk all about this big showdown. It's big for standings. It's big because it's the Rebels. But we're just getting news right now, like just coming down. I don't even know if you've heard this. So we'll get your reaction. But the Angels have released Albert Pujols.
All that. Heard that.
Can we talk about that? I mean, I don't need you to.
Of course.
You don't have to criticize the front office of a major league team. But Albert Pujols is the most important player of the who has played entirely in the 21st century, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was a rookie in 01.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what to make of it. I think it's sad.
I'll just say he was hitting 198 with five home runs and like 12 no RBIs, doubles. 13 strikeouts and three walks. So it's not like he was having a great year.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's sad to see him go, you know, but you would think he at some point had to agree to this. You know, I think, you know, certain people are owed that respect. And I think he's definitely one of them. So I'm assuming he agreed to it and maybe said, hey, maybe I can go somewhere and just DH and finish it out. I don't really know. But hey, what a hell of a career. And man, he was fun to watch. He could really hit.
667 career home runs at the time of this recording. And that is quite a few.
Yeah. I mean, I had three in college. I thought.
I guess you don't really have to deal with this. Like you're a college skipper. Nobody is too old or has lost their skill set. Age has not eroded somebody's skill set on your roster. Can you imagine what that must be like to have to tell Albert Pujols, sorry, champ, you're no longer good enough to play for my team?
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. Yeah, in college, we don't deal with that. I think the closest thing we deal with in college is you misevaluate and they don't develop like you thought they were. So you have to hang on to them, but you have to hang on to them. You don't have, you know, now we do have the luxury. We don't have, you know, like the Power Fives have multiple year scholarships. We don't have that. But could you imagine if you're at the Power Five level and you misevaluate and you're stuck for three more years, guaranteed? It's kind of like guaranteed money. But we don't deal with that. Not at all. Not even remotely close to it. I don't. But I couldn't imagine being Joe Maddon in that front office and having to sit down. And I'm assuming it's way over Joe's head. I don't really know, but either way, I mean, what a hell of a career.
Okay, so just baseball people. Greatest right-hand hitters I think I've ever laid eyes on. Mm-hmm. Sheffield, Manny, and then I think Pujols is the top. Are those your guys? Greatest right-hand
hitters? Yeah, I mean, I think the greatest right-handed hitter, it's funny. You know what's funny? And here's another thing that's funny is we always get caught up in the left and the right-handed hitters.
Well, the left swings prettier.
Yeah, and we always get caught up in the matchups, the left and the right. And I know this happens a lot in college. But always look who the batting champions are every year. Most of them are right-handed.
Well, isn't that just because most – well,
no, okay. Are probably right-handed.
Right.
But, you know, the one guy you're leaving out is Miguel Cabrera.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
You know, somebody like that's a true hitter that just can hit and can hit to all fields, can hit for power, can take his singles. And I mean, I'm not going to put this guy in that class, but I'll put this guy in that class in the last 10 years, maybe a little less than that, who I think can really hit, Justin Turner.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, could really hit. And I, like you said, he's not in that class per se, but if you gave the last 8 years about hits and average and doubles and home runs and all that, he's in there. He's somewhere in there. I don't know where. Now I may be biased. I may be West Coast biased, but that's okay. I'm allowed to be.
Well, yeah, especially on this podcast. It's funny, I haven't worked one of your games since the before times. What was the midweek that came in from New York before everything got shut down last year? It was like Hofstra, I think.
Hofstra weekend. Yeah. We had a weekend with them.
Oh, okay. I think I worked.
Yeah, Hofstra and Wichita State.
That's right. Hofstra, Wichita State. Yep. That was the last time I worked one of your games.
And then we went to St. Mary's and got shut down after that.
Yeah. You were going to host San Francisco. I was getting ready to do that, right?
Sac State.
Sacramento. That's right. Yeah.
Yep. Sac State.
So anyway, the point being, it's been a while. How, and I think I know, but I just want to reestablish how much of the good play, how much can we talk about? Like, what's your superstition level? Can I say you won five in a row?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, at this point, I the only thing I've told our team is it's game seven every day. I mean, I actually think it's that way for the league in general right now. I think superstitions, I don't know. I think you catch yourself probably a little bit. But, I mean, we have to manage like it's game seven, and our players have to play like it's game seven. Like I said, I think for the most part, that's the league. I mean, I think – if you lose two out of three, you and somebody else sweeps or somebody else wins two out of three, I think you're in jeopardy. I think, you know, it could be detrimental to your chances. But that's just reality. And as you know, I try to be as real as I can.
So let's pick this apart. UNLV 11-7. In the league, they're in first place. San Diego State, second place, 14-10, and then you guys, the Pack, at 12-9. How's it going to work? Like, how's that going to shake out standings wise? I don't think it's all going to add up just because of different numbers of games and such.
Yeah. So basically how they're going to do it, how the league's going to do it is at the end of the, so it's all winning percentage. So at the end of the day, at the end of the league, they're going to average out how many conference games everybody's played, and they're going to get a league average. Okay, so let's say the league average is 25. Let's just use 25.
So the league average would be 25 games played per team.
Yep. And if you specifically did not play the league average, you have to get within 6 of the league average. So you'd have to be at 19 games. So let's say you played 15. You would get 4 losses tacked onto your record to get to the threshold.
Okay.
So that's really how they're going to do it. That's why the winning percentage is just like you said, you're looking at games played and nothing's adding up. But if UNLV or San Diego State, let's say San Diego State wins game one, UNLV or us would win or lose game one. And then I think you have another tie. I think if I'm calculating all that right, or I think it'd still be within a half game or something like that.
Well, I'll just say this right now, as we tape this, heading into UNLV at Nevada this weekend, you have 10 conference games scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you're 12-9 so far. Was that 21 games? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on pace to play 31 conference games.
Yeah. So the 25 number is probably pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to meet a threshold, assuming you play the remainder games.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, we're at 21 and we play 3 of them already. We play 3 this weekend because we're all negative and our testing and all that. So we'll play 3. Now you're 24. So, yeah, I think the minimum is going to be pretty close. I bet you it's going to be within 1 or 2 games of 25 somewhere, which one way or the other.
So what's working for you guys? What changed? Or were you this good and the game just evens things out?
I think we were always capable. I think that's something that we've talked about. I mean, if you go on the diamond, I mean, Marco Valenzuela, Bosetti, we got new shortstops, 2 of them, Zamora, Shrum, Anthony Flores is back, Matt Clayton's in the mix. I mean, if you go around the diamond and with Schartz and Jake back, I mean, I would think I would agree with everybody. Everybody would kind of say we're capable. I thought we were more than capable. I thought we were better than that. And I told our club that from the get-go. I mean, I thought this team has a chance to win the league if they can do and play the game, and that's part of it. But I always, and I got this from Coach Savage, I always thought it's not really how you handle losing. It's always how you handle winning. And John was big on that. And, we go to Cal Poly and we win 3. We lose the first game. And then we pull out a 2-1 game, which we couldn't win a 1-run game a year ago for anything. So that was huge. And then you win 2 more at a good Cal Poly team on the road. And I didn't think we handled our success very well. And it's the same message I told our team, I think, on Sunday or Saturday after the 3rd game here is, that's fine that we swept San Diego and they're really good and they're really well coached and prepared and all that. But I think for them, it's going to be how they handle that week. And no one really knows the true answer until you get to the test. It's like I always love when coaches try to predict how great they've been all week because that's what you're supposed to say. I don't know. We won't know till Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening, really how well we prepared throughout the week.
What do you take from the first UNLV matchup or what was decisive in that needs to be decisive in another way?
Yeah. It's funny. It's a long time ago. We played them. We were their first weekend and they were our second weekend of the year. So it's a long, long time ago. It seems like years ago. But they're healthier. You know, that's one thing. I think they had one of their players that was hurt. You know, one of the big players was hurt that weekend, and he's back. And then, you know, Chase Maddox is out for the year as starts. You know, so two of our starters for each team are out. But I'm just watching their numbers or just looking at their numbers. They don't walk anybody. And it's already hard enough to hit in today's world. I don't care if it's college or pro or wherever, it's hard to hit. But they don't walk anybody. And so they got 59 walks on the year. So if you look at that and you're just kind of watching the numbers and you're watching some strikeouts and you're watching the offense walks, the offense doesn't strike out for them. I mean, it's going to be a great test because they're a really good team. And, you know, people always talk about, you know, I know it's the rivalry, I guess, per se, and all that stuff. But for us, it's just we're trying to play a really good team, and we got to play really good to beat a really good team. And that's the time of year that we're in, though. We're in May. May in college is equivalent to September in Major League Baseball. And you want to be relevant at this time of the year and at least in the conversation. And UNLV and Nevada are in that conversation, along with Fresno, along with San Diego State. I mean, you want to be relevant at this time, and everybody's doing that. So it's going to be a fun last three – what's there, 3 weeks left? It's going to be a fun 3 weeks left, 4 weeks.
Can I talk about your team fielding percentage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I always like to talk about that.
Well, I know, but again, I want to be sensitive to, you know, I won't even say the number, but it's a fine percentage and it's the best in the conference. And that's, well, that's just a major pillar of your coaching skill set. It has been before you were a head coach. That's what you teach. Defense, especially around the infield where the majority of miscues might happen. What does that mean to you about your program, the program you've built?
You know, I think it just shows attention to detail. And I think in a time where I don't want to say defense is ever not valued, because I think it is, but I don't know if it's paid attention to for 56 games. And I don't know if it's paid attention to from August until June. You know, I know it's important in June. I know it's important in May. I know that stuff. But I think it just speaks volumes more to the players because it's hard. I always tell these guys when they first come in, for 18 years, they've been taught to hit and to do this and to do that. And for the first time in their life, someone's teaching them how to play defense. But I also think, like I said earlier, I think it's just the detail part and to be really good at the finer things in the game. You know, it's partly why the bunting game is so important to us. Not that we do it a lot or do it a lot. It's not that. It's more the discipline of being a really good baseball player. I just don't want to be a conditional baseball player and be really good offensively, but I'm a liability defensively. And I don't want to be vice versa either. I don't want to do that. And I think the tribute to these guys in taking that and running with it. I mean, I'm not fielding the ball for them. I'm not throwing the ball. Dave developed a sense of passion, I think, for defense, a sense of pride for it, because I think that's a lot of it. And they've done it. They've put in the work, and I think that's just a tribute to them. And I think it's kept us in some games. I mean, when you can go a weekend versus one of the top offenses in the country, San Diego State, that does not strike out with a lot of balls in play and you don't make any errors, I'd be crazy not to think it played a part in it.
There, I had the privilege of being at a practice 3 weeks ago. And speaking of defense, you were coaching up the first baseman, and that you were helping them get into position, footwork, digging balls out. And, you know, I've been at practice with you a fair amount of times now over our careers. And I've also just been in a fair number of baseball practices. And I heard something, and you used a you used a colloquial expression for a bowel movement. As far as this, the stance, the footwork, the squat, the position you wanted the first baseman to assume when they're fielding a ball in the dirt. You wanted them to emulate as if they were having a bowel movement. Is that a polite way to put it?
Yeah, that's a yeah. Yeah. That's a polite way.
Yeah. I'd never heard that. And have I just not been paying attention? Have you been telling your first baseman to have a bowel movement all these years? Or is that a new thing? Where does that come from?
No, I think it's – well, A, I think first base is one of the most undercoached positions on the field. I don't think anybody really knows how to coach it. I think they get left out. But it's funny – you know, going back to that, is part of that saying was to make them aware of being in their legs.
Yeah. Okay.
And making their hamstrings as parallel to the ground as possible.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. And sometimes you got to come up with expressions.
Sure.
And be creative.
Yeah.
So they can constantly,
well, I remember
they just write it. They right away understand it, you know, and that's something. And the other term is, you know, we call like waistbenders, you know, I don't like waistbenders. And so that was just part of it. I've used it a little bit before. It just depends. Some years it gets tucked away and some years it doesn't. But hopefully they understood the correlation to the two and, you know, figure it out. I thought they got better as the practice at least went along, the one you were sitting there with. And it was good. It was a great learning moment for them. And to try and you're trying to paint the picture, right? As a coach or a broadcaster. I mean, you have to do it daily. I mean, you're trying to paint the picture so no one has to guess.
Well, yeah. And that's actually it. And folks, it rhymes with, you know, rake the spit. You were just saying, hey, you know, get down on the ball.
Yep.
Get down for a throw that could be in the dirt to dig it out. You just, and you were just telling the guys to use their legs to get low. And it would, yeah. And the reason it stuck with me, not because it was profane, but it was just instant. It totally clicked. It made a lot of sense in a very short amount of time, short amount of communication. Yeah. So I guess we'd call that effective coaching.
We're trying. We try all things. Yeah. We try. you got to really paint the picture and they have clear understanding of it.
I'm going to talk to Bassetti after the break. What should I ask him? He's a guy who's been in the program now. I mean, he's a program guy.
Yeah, I think, gosh, Lee, I don't. I mean, he started off not very good. You know, so I would ask him about, you know, what's been the change in him. And I always think it's good and interesting to talk about the program. You know, what's it mean to play here? You know, what will he take away from this program? What's the goals of the program while he's here? And I always think it's so fascinating to talk about that. And my dad Marco did a good job last week or 2 weeks ago about it.
Was Bassetti, I think he's got an uncle that played in the big leagues.
Yeah, I think so.
Was that, I mean, do you care about that when you recruit a guy?
Yeah, I think it's all, you know, it's lineage. I think that's a huge deal. But I, in all honesty, I don't think I knew that until about a few weeks ago.
Did Sushant tell you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no clue. That's bad recruiting, I guess. But I had no idea about that.
All right. We'll talk to Tyler Bassetti after the break. He's the head coach, TJ Bruce, Howlin' with the Pack podcast.
The constant energy, the tight turns and bustle of the city. Some survive it, others were made to conquer it. The first ever Lexus UX and UX F-Sport crossovers are crafted for those who were made for the city. UX, starting at 32,000. See Dolan Lexus.
MSRP excludes delivery, processing, and handling fee of $1,025, which may be subject to change at any time. Excludes taxes, title, license, and optional equipment. Dealer price will vary.
Howlin' with the Pack podcast is back. Tyler Bassetti is with us right now. Redshirt junior infielder Tyler Bassetti was named the Mountain West Player of the Week Monday in recognition of his outstanding weekend performance during Nevada's three-game sweep of San Diego State. Bassetti also claimed this week's Nevada Student Athlete of the Week honor. This is the first conference weekly honor of your career. Do you guys pay attention to that stuff? You care about that stuff?
I mean, not really. I mean, obviously it's good to like get that, but the main goal is just to win as a team, you know? So all that is just the byproduct of winning and playing well. So, yeah.
San Diego State traditionally has been a difficult team in the conference during your time with the Pack. Why have you owned them this year?
I think it just goes down to being competitive. You know, this team has put in a lot of work in the fall, and when big moments happen, we're prepared for them. So we're able to come out on top.
There's nothing more to it. You guys are just prepared. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, that's really all it comes down to is our work.
You guys have won 5 in a row. You're in the hunt now coming down the stretch. You have 10 games scheduled left. There's no conference postseason tournament this year, so this is like an old school divisional race. What has anything changed to make you guys better in this hot streak, or is it just that you guys are competitive and things kind of even out over a season?
To be honest, I think like the turning point so far has been playing against Texas, because once we saw that we could compete with the third ranked team in the nation, I think it gave us some confidence. So once that happened, we started playing better. And I think like going into conference play, we're like, I mean, we should win our conference, right? So it's like, if we can compete with teams like this, then let's run through our conference and get to June and show people what Nevada baseball is about. Because with all the work that we do, it's like, just winning the Mountain West shouldn't be the standard. We should be able to play in a regional, super regional Calder series. So, yeah.
Yeah, you guys lost back-to-back one-run games at Texas. You were in both games the whole way. What did you learn? I mean, I know you look at the score and you say, oh, we can hang with the Longhorns or whatever, but what was it specifically about those two narrow defeats that was instructive?
I mean, I think just the little details. They were both really close ball games, like you said. But just the little mistakes, you know, like not getting the runner over or making that play at the end of the game. Just the little details like that. But, I mean, playing against Texas, it was like – it was a bigger crowd, right? So as a like smaller school, you're not used to that. But seeing that if you can get your mental state of mind in the right state – then you know you're in the right, like the right way to play. You definitely can figure it out and start getting on a roll, like moving it over to everything else that you're doing.
You're from Vacaville. What is it about the Wolfpack? You guys have like Vacaville, it's Packaville, right? Carson Strong and Brandon Dalton on the football team. And you, like, what's up? What's up with Vacaville?
I mean, I feel like we always have a few kids that come to school here each year, but no, it's honestly been great seeing that Carson Strong, Brandon Dalton, and then me, of course, but just having the success, like in the athletics, we're always texting each other saying good luck and then supporting each other when we do well or when we don't do well.
Your uncle played in the bigs. How did that influence you in the game of baseball?
It influenced me a lot. I mean, they just posted a picture of me the other day in a Blue Jays helmet. But, I mean, growing up, him teaching me things about baseball just made me really fall in love with the game. And then all the stories he has of being in the major leagues, like, I just love hearing everything that he has to talk about baseball. And he has so much knowledge that he's brought over to me. And it's just... you know, as a little kid, you look up to older professional baseball players and you just want to be like them. So I think just having him as a part of my family has made me want to play baseball even more. So my uncle Rick, he got drafted by the Phillies.
Got
and then eventually played on the Blue Jays. And they played on the Cardinals as well. But my mom's brother, my uncle Todd, he played up to AA in the Blue Jays organization.
Got
so just having that bloodline of baseball, you know, like it's just what you do. You know, you're kind of grown up into it, which I mean, I'm not mad about at all because I love the game. But yeah, they've definitely had influence on me playing baseball.
What do you think when you hear people talk about young people don't like baseball or it's too boring or whatever? Because I'm 43. And people were saying that when I was a kid, that, the kids these days like video games. They don't like baseball.
Yeah, no, I mean, our generation is definitely different. And I know a lot of older generations say that. But I think, honestly, if you don't like baseball and you think it's too slow, it's because you're mentally weak. It's a mental, like, there's a, like, I'm not trying to shoot shots at anyone, but
great.
It is a game within a game, you know? Like, it's not just, he's pitching against me. It's like, all right, now I'm on defense, like getting your pre-pitch, or, you know, you got to play pitch to pitch. It's the big mental game. And I think people have a struggle staying present in the moment. It's not like football where it's really fast, or basketball where you're going and there's running clock. You know, it's pitch to pitch and you got to stay focused in the moment.
I mean, I'm not going to get you in trouble, but I mean, what do you think about like the rule changes? Like I was listening to the Giants and the Rockies and they played 2 7-inning doubleheaders. You guys are playing 9-inning doubleheaders.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have a take on that?
Personally, for our team, you know, I mean, you know, Coach Bruce, we're all blue collared. So it's like 9-inning games, is we play with our advantage just because we condition a lot. We're here to outwork you. So when we have those long days, we're going to out tough you and we're just going to have the endurance to outlast anyone we play. So honestly, in my opinion, I think it plays in our favor.
So I interviewed Coach Bruce earlier. I told him I was going to talk to you and he said that I should ask you about where you think what your experience in the program has told you, taught you about the program and what the program is about now. Because Coach Bruce says, you know, the players are the ones who know what a program is about more than anyone.
Right. No, yeah, I mean, going back to, like, how I was raised, this program literally represents my whole life. So, I mean, my dad was always hard on me. He always had high expectations for me. And I think that's what Coach Bruce brings out in everyone. You know, like, you could do something good, but Coach Bruce wants you to do it great. So I think it's just a blue collar, hardworking, like want to be the best version of yourself every single day. And that is truly what Nevada baseball has brought out in me. And I think if you buy into the program and care, then you're going to reach goals and limits that you never thought you would reach.
What's it like to play for Coach Bruce?
He's honestly like I said, he's like a second father to me. He's always just giving me crap here and there, but I mean, it's a great time. Like always talking smack, but he wants the best for me and everyone, to be honest. But no, playing for Coach Bruce has been awesome. Like it's just, he shows you what a true competitor really is.
Is he old school?
For sure. He for sure is old school. It's not, he's not going to tell you you're great or like, good job, buddy. Way to go. No, he's going to give you the truth straight up. And he's going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. So, but at the end of the day, that's going to make you a better person. Well, I'll shout out Dilly, see if he's got a few homers in him this weekend.
Dilly, that's Dylan Schramm.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. You guys still like, so I haven't worked the first half part of the season. Now I'm taking over the rest of the way. Is that still like, you guys still chant that or holler that at him when he comes to the plate?
We haven't done it as like my freshman year when we really would shout out.
It was amazing.
It was awesome. It was awesome. Loved it. But no, we definitely still call him Dilly.
Good.
Stuff like that. But yeah.
He's Tebow. It's the Howlin' with the Pack podcast.